So what did we really try to do in this analysis, which, by the way, is part of the course materials that have been distributed to you? And I really hope that all of you will take a look, if you haven't already, at the report that was distributed. And I will mention a bit more about that in a few minutes. But what are the objectives that we had in this analysis? Well, we wanted to really try to figure out, is there empirical evidence? Is there data and statistical models that will support this contention that there is increased uncertainty? And the way we've been able to do that is we've focused at the USPTO. Uncertainty, legal uncertainty, is of course a much broader concept than just uncertainty in the examination process. And so in that sense, we're only looking at one piece of a broader phenomenon. But nonetheless, we'd like to find out, and what we do in this study is try to find out, is there empirical evidence to support the contention that the Alice versus CLS Bank Supreme Court ruling increased uncertainty in patent examination? We would also like to know, and this seems like it's fairly intuitive and perhaps may not be surprising at all, we'd also like to know if post the Alice decision, whether there is a higher probability of receiving a Section 101 rejection on an examiner's first action. Now, one might logically expect that because no longer is a computer implementation sufficient, right? Something significantly more needs to be there. So one might imagine that very intuitively would be the case. So how did we go about this empirical analysis? Well, we brought together a number of different data sets on the prosecution history. We brought in the classification on the patents. We brought in the claim, information on claims, information on office actions, as well as applications and patents. So all of this data are actually public. Much of it is available either through the Office of the Chief Economist as direct downloads, or through the open data portal at the USPTO. There is an API, an application programmer interface, that's what that is, that people can use to draw the information from the PTO on office actions. And of course, this AppFT and PatFT refer to that. We also utilized the USPTO's chart of subject matter eligibility from court decisions that is compiled by the patent operations and Deputy Commissioner Bob Barr's group to try to identify, and we actually used it to identify those USPC, US patent classifications that were affected by the Alice decision. This is one of the key things that we have to figure out in this study. So what are the key variables that we use? And the main variables are, number one, what are the Alice impacted technologies? We call this a treatment group. And the reason we do that is we want to know, how did these technologies get affected by the decision relative to another group called a control group, right? So in order to interpret the impact of the decision, we have to ask the question, compared to what? And what we have here are two groups. One is the treatment group that gets affected by the decision, and the other is the control group that is not directly impacted by the Supreme Court decision. How did we define these groups? Well, what we did is we went to this information from the from Bob Barr's group. We collected all of the U.S. patent classifications that were ever listed as in one of these cases, and we included those as the treatment group. In other words, we defined that group very broadly. Actually, there were sometimes only one patent out of a whole three-digit U.S. patent classification that was affected by an Alice decision, but we went ahead and included all the patents in that three-digit U.S. patent classification. So we were fairly broad in our treatment group. Now, remember, if you define something very broadly, it's less likely that you find an effect. Right? You're watering down or diluting what might be the real strength of the impact by defining it broadly. So we've kind of been quite conservative in this regard in defining the treatment group in that way. Now, what is the control group? Well, the control group are all the other three-digit U.S. patent classification technologies, patents, that were never listed in one of these court cases and not included in our treatment group. So that's how we defined the groups. Now, we have two outcome variables that are affecting, that are being impacted by these groups. One of them is the examiner 101 rejections. And what this is a yes, no. Did this patent application receive a first office action 101 rejection, yes or no? And so that becomes, gets put into what's called a probability model. And we estimate then what's the impact on the likelihood of receiving a 101 rejection on your first action. The second outcome variable, which is the one I actually find most compelling and interesting, is the examiner uncertainty. So what did we do here? So what we did is we actually took all of the examiners within a certain time period and a whole three-digit U.S. patent classification. And remember, a three-digit level, and I realize, of course, that U.S. patent classifications are now past tense, but that's what we had when we did the study. Now, let me go back to this. We took one of these broad groups called the three-digit U.S. patent classification, all the examiners within that group, and we looked at the variation. What is the variance? What is the variability of decision-making within that technology group and that time period? And that becomes a measure of uncertainty. So uncertainty here is interpreted as variability. Now, this sort of restates what I've been saying, but actually gives you the U.S. patent classifications that we used as ALICE-impacted technologies. And some of those may be familiar to you now that we've moved to CPC, the cooperative patent classification. These are less familiar than they used to be, but nonetheless, these are the classifications.